interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Friday to you. And it is the TGIF May 10 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're back live at Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love at the home of, the crab meat cheesecake, the shrimp corn dogs, and plenty more. We'll tell you about what's going on here later in the program. I'm joined, as always, for the next 2 hours by the famous Clint D, live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I've got to go split screen to begin the show today. We'll lead with LSU at Arkansas last night, what it means going forward, but also the NBA. Either of those topics tickles your fancy. Give us a call to lead off the program, 706-0111. LSU first. Tigers walloped last night in the land of the Razorbacks, 14-4. And they are now 600 on the season. Yeah, they are a 600 ball club, 30-20, 14-11 in SEC play. And let's forget for a moment, if we all can, about the idea of getting to that super regional host line. I think for the moment, the idea of hosting a regional is in serious jeopardy. Everybody's mentality will tell you that it's even worse than that. And today I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to try to pull you back from the ledge with this season. Past this year, that is a much different conversation. But last night the Tigers conceded 12 runs in the first four innings. And it was like a stepladder from hell. One run in the first, two in the second, three in the third, six in the fourth. And the only consistency is that they were inconsistent everywhere last night. Mikhail Hilliard lasted three innings, gave up six earned on only seven hits. And then from there, it was by and large punt with one exception. We'll get to that notion of punt. But Threadgill, Beck, Moffitt mercifully ended the mercy kill last night in Fayetteville. At the dish, they had problems as well. Cabrera, Smith, a combined four hits. The rest of the team eked out three collectively. And I mentioned the idea of a punt. Maneri and LSU subbed in five hitters last night in the blowout. So they not only limped to the finish line on the mound, they were willing to concede and wave the white flag last night at the plate as well. And you consider the big picture, it's pretty easy to point to pitching. Yes, they have ailed from many different angles, but 45 runs given up in the last three games, it's the most since 97. I know. LSU won the College World Series under Skip Bertman that year. This group, it ain't that group. Not by a long shot. So suddenly the Tigers have lost four straight. They look anemic on the mound. No consistency at the plate. Leadership, a huge question. But then there's the one area where they really didn't punt last night. And it's got Tiger fans up in a roar. I don't blame you for this one. Matthew Beck coming in and basically being burned for the rest of this weekend, that's a move I can't get behind, and it's one that I just can't understand. And so LSU goes into a ball game tonight, and boy, do they need Eric Walker. I mean, more than ever. The combo of Walker tonight, Marceau tomorrow afternoon, you're getting close to Princess Leia time. It's almost your only hope. If you can't do something in this series, if you leave Fayetteville and you've lost six in a row, I'm not sure how much that you can right the ship with a home series versus Auburn, and then what would be a treacherous draw in the SEC tournament bracket in Hoover. And so I'll ask you big picture about LSU baseball in our next segment, your sink or swim question of the day. But certainly last night, it took everything that was bad about the midweek loss to Louisiana Tech and intensified it. And there are even more questions about whether the Tigers have waved the white flag on the entire season, about whether or not Paul Maneri is the man for the job moving forward. I've got some thoughts. I'm going to save them for the other side of this break. You want to call? We got time now. 706-0111. I mentioned split screen. On the other side, it's the NBA. and they deserve some run, even on a local sports talk show. We can go national. I've got that ability. You like watching it, so let's do it. The NBA saw two Game 7s force last night and has its premier series taking center stage tonight, Houston and Golden State. Leads me to two very quick thoughts. Number one, who said the NBA playoff sans LeBron has lost its luster? Quite the opposite. Seems to be a bit more of an open track, wouldn't you say, at least on the eastern side? And now with Kevin Durant going out, a lot of things seem possible in the West. The second thing I'm forced to mention at this point, are we sure that the big bad wolf, that is the Golden State Warriors, are bad for the game? And you may say, Ben, it's easy to come with that when the Dubs have lost the best offensive player in the game, in Kevin Durant. I'd have told you this before the series. Houston set their sights on Golden State last year, nearly took them down. This time around, they've got their chance again. It was a wildly competitive series last year. It is again this year. So no LeBron in the playoffs, no problems as far as intrigue goes. And just because Golden State has won two straight, three or four, and they had their sights set on more, doesn't mean that there's not intrigue in the association. Two games last night that took series from games 6-7. Philly beat Toronto 112-101. Jimmy Butler, 25 points. And Ben Simmons, finally, he stopped hitting the snooze button. He woke up 21-8-6, his best game in the Eastern Conference semifinals. I still like Toronto in Game 7 Sunday, but at least you've got a decisive final game north of the border. Late night last night, Portland won against Denver 119-108. Lillard with 32, McCollum with 30, and get ready for this. In case you didn't watch it, here's some stat watching. Rodney Hood with 25 off the bench. They're going to be awfully hard to beat. Any team would be if they get that type of contribution coming off the pine. The Rockets can get that level of work from Eric Gordon. As we saw last night, Portland occasionally can get it from Rodney Hood. You're not going to beat him when he does that. So those are two games that will be played Sunday, Game 7s at that. Tonight, as I mentioned, you've got Golden State at Houston. Rockets, 7.5-point favorites. Feels a little bit low, doesn't it? Without Durant, I wonder if this one gets out of hand. I think Game 7 could be a different story, but tonight the Rockets favored by a touchdown and a hook, as Cousin Dino would tell you. And how about this for symmetry? It's really the exact opposite of last year. Think about it. The Rockets had the 3-2 lead, and their injuries kind of made their wheels start falling off of the collective wagon. This time around, the Dubs lead 3-2. Kevin Durant is out. Quick stats, his fill-in, and then I'm going to move on to a local note before we wrap up segment number one. But on the subject of Kevin Durant, his 34.2 points a game in these playoffs far surpasses what anybody else is doing, even Kawhi Leonard. He's the two-time reigning finals MVP. As he asked a couple of weeks ago in an interview, I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am, right? Oh, yeah, we know who you are, big fella. But without Kevin Durant, Game 5 showed us that Steve Kerr is going to choose Kevin Looney more often than not to take his place. Physically more imposing, bigger, certainly a huge void in terms of scoring. Others are going to have to fill that void. But it did make the Warriors better on the boards. And the Rockets really boxed them pretty good first two games in that department. With Kevin Looney taking most of Kevin Durant's time second half the other night, the Warriors won the rebounding battle, and they really made a dent on the offensive glass. So that could be something that changes the complexion of the rest of this series. We'll take a quick call, and then I've got that local factoid for you. Trust me, it's worth the wait. But with no hesitation, we're going out now to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. T, what you got for us on a Friday?
Hey, Ben, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, doing great, friend. How are you?
Good. Hey, listen, I'm going to make it quick. I've got a question for you, and I'll hang up and listen. How do you think this will, LSU baseball team, the pitching, how do you think that will affect recruiting for next year? I don't think many guys are going to turn down pro contracts to come to LSU. I'll hang up and listen, my man. Love your show.
You know, look, I appreciate the question and the call even more, T. You know that. I don't know. And I think the answer there is inconclusive. I am not ever a homer for the sake of being a homer. I recognize some of the issues they're having. They're not exclusive to LSU, but they certainly they're inflamed right now within the program, wouldn't you say? It's as obvious as it could be that this year, especially, Alan Dunn's having issues with those kids and fatigue. And I would tell you that the way they've recruited since Dunn has come over, a longtime MLB pitching coach, a guy that I think was able to sell his past as a recruiting tool for the future at LSU, I don't feel like that's slowed down one bit. And I know that they occasionally have lost some of the guys that were coming aboard, right? Mac Marshall comes to mind from Texas. They couldn't get Zach Lee, who instead, well, actually, that was more of a football thing. Went to go play with the Dodgers, but you get what I'm saying. They've had the ones that got away, but they're still getting the Marsos, right? I mean, they're still going out and getting Jaden Hill and Cole Henry, and everybody, consensus, says that a healthy Cole Henry is going to be a freaking stud at the next level. And before that, we can go down the line, right? Lang, Nola, Gausman. Doesn't feel like they've had a hard time getting those guys. Could this year become a hurdle to getting them in the future? T, it's a fair question. I'm going to say that it's too early to make that judgment call. I think the brand name that LSU baseball is nationwide helps them to get that. Think about everything we've mentioned with LSU football, right? They're going to California. They're going out to the East Coast, D.C., Virginia. They got kids coming in from Ohio on official visits today. LSU football is becoming that national brand. LSU baseball has long been that. Are they losing some of that luster? Maybe, but I don't think we've seen that occur just yet. All right, how about that local tidbit? Those of you that were sitting on this one, we appreciate you waiting. I've had it in my back pocket since I saw it on Twitter about 45 minutes ago. Congrats to Walker Howard. Second time this week that the sophomore from STM, a quarterback for the Cougars, his name has come up on the program. He got his first collegiate offer today. He reported on Twitter, and it came from Billy Napier and the Raging Cajuns. Howard, of course, a 2022 quarterback, son of former STM Cougar, LSU Tiger Jamie Howard, and currently a backup on campus to Caleb Holstein. Be interesting to see how much, if at all, they choose to integrate him this year. But there's no question that Walker Howard is going to be a big-time Power 5 conference recruit. But you got to love it. The local school getting in there first. What would I say to that? Shoot your shot, Billy. You got to get in there. So Billy Napier, Tim Leger, the coaches that were tagged by Walker on Twitter, and good on them for going in first. Big program today. Speaking of heavy hitters, at 4:30, about 15 minutes from right now, Brian Lazar, he'll give us the pulse on LSU baseball live from Baton Rouge. And joining me, he'll sit to my right at 5 o'clock. We'll take him as long as we can get him. Louis Cook, head coach of the Notre Dame Pios, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, fired up for Louis Cook to join us at Rufino's on the River. Come out if you can and do the same. We'll be here until 6 o'clock tonight. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in on 103.
Yeah. Let's go! Let's go, baby!
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Right back in, and I'm basically surrounded by the braised pork cheeks, the shrimp corn dogs, and the crab meat cheesecake. Yeah, it'll make your mouth water. Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're back to business on 103.7 The Game. Of course, we're hanging out at Rufino's on the River, and I love some of the favorite appetizers I just mentioned. If you heard Ruffin Rodriguez live with us last week, he told a story that he just about darn near named this place crab meat cheesecake. It was so popular in Baton Rouge when he came over here. He found out that people were making the trip across the basin just to get that. So today I come to you live from Rufino's on the River. I could well be live from Crab Meat Cheesecake on the River, and that would be fine by me. We got some time for your phone calls, 706-0111. In fact, in about 40 seconds, I'll ask you a question that you might just pick up the phone and dial us for. But I have to share this. We often have on our good friend Lynn Rollins, right? I mean, the guy's a four-time Louisiana Sportscaster of the Year. And apparently he just spun some of the finest Lynn Rollins yarn that there is, calling the Southland Southland Sports Softball Tournament on ESPNU. It's the championship round. I've seen this quote floating around on Twitter, so numerous people caught this. Here's your Lynn Rollins-ism on a Friday. This game is tighter than the top string on a Texas fiddle. Just felt you needed to know that because it gave me great joy to read it. And, yeah, also a good reminder, we got to get Lynn on sooner than later. CD, to the music, please, and then the question.
Exciting and new.
After the events of, well, really the last week, do you believe LSU baseball has given up on this season? Pretty simple answer, but I'm betting you have a more complicated rationale or reason for why or why not. Whatever it is, call us, let us know. We've got some time before Brian Lazar joins us from Baton Rouge in about 10 minutes. The number to play, 706-0111. Again, the question, do you believe LSU baseball has given up on this season? CD, you're up first.
You know, I think after what happened on Ole Miss series, I wasn't necessarily sold on them giving up on the season. I felt like they were wound up fighting back in that one. But I feel like what I saw last night, especially after that grand slam, this is a team that seems like they've just given up on the season. So I'm swimming on that one. I'm swimming with a lot of confidence because it just feels like this team has given up.
I don't feel that way. But check out the wordplay here because, yeah, it's always in semantics, right? It's always in how you phrase things. I don't believe that LSU baseball has given up on this season. The Ole Miss Game 3, Clint, to your point, was proof that at that point, at least they hadn't, right? I mean, the fight in the ninth inning, the near-historic comeback, and they have absolutely fallen flat since. But what I will tell you is this. I'm sinking here, okay? So I don't believe that LSU baseball has given up on this season. I believe this season has now given up on them. I don't think there's any more chance for them to do some of the things they wanted. In other words, they're running out of real estate to get right, not just in terms of health, in terms of consistent play, good habits, leadership, tenacity, the ability to fight from behind, the ability to keep leads. I think at this point it might be more accurate to say that the season has given up on them and their opportunity to turn things around. Now, what I will unequivocally swim on is that they gave up on the game last night. That's why, in the opening segment, I continuously use the phrase punted on. I use the verb punt. No doubt about it. Once Mikhail Hilliard wasn't the answer, 79 pitches over three innings, and he gave up six runs, yeah, they punted from there. With the exception of wasting Matthew Beck, they absolutely punted. Threadgill, Moffitt taking the mound, they weren't trying to rescue that thing. And I'm not going to say that I fault Paul for that. They absolutely relented, right? They conceded a 2-foot putt to Arkansas in the fourth inning. Yeah, I know. More than a half a game to go. They conceded that ball game, and that'll get under the skin of many a Tiger fan. Not going to tell you I blame you, but they're playing for the greater good of the rest of the series. Now, do you think they have a snowball's chance in hell of winning these two games the way they're going? It's an entirely different story. What I will tell you is this. I don't think they've given up and waved the white flag on this season. I don't think that a program as proud as LSU baseball, to coach like Paul Maneri, with some of these guys that came back for their senior year, I don't think they've given up on the season. But I think that there's enough that has transpired that it's basically too late for them to right the ship. And so I'll even rescind a prediction I was willing to give a couple of days ago, right? They find a way to host a regional. They win it. They go on the road to a super, and they lose in two or three games. That's probably, at this point, feeling a little generous. And so, again, you know me. I'm never giving you home or radio just because it looks almost certain at this point they're going to have to go on the road in regional play. And if they get dumped into a place like Coral Gables, as Baseball America predicted, home of the Miami Hurricanes earlier this week, whew, it's going to be a tough road to hoe. So, Clint, I'm going to tell you that I don't think they've given up on this season, but I don't see the turnaround happening. I do know that they gave up on last night, and that absolutely chaps the backside of a lot of fans out there. Let's hear a little bit about it. T already called in. He wants to know how much, if at all, some of this affects pitching recruiting for the future. I know that you're disgusted with what you saw last night, but YP, you people out there in listener land, what do you make out of the rest of this season? Do you think they have a chance? Do you think they're even gunning for it anymore? If I were just to take the pulse of Twitter, which is a very dangerous item on the agenda, I think most of LSU Nation on Twitter thinks that not only is it done, but they're not trying anymore. Whew, that's a mouthful for a program like this. We'll have more open space. If we don't get you in this segment, we'll fit you in before hour number one is over. But don't forget, we're heading to Baton Rouge. In about 6 or 7 minutes, Brian Lazar does a great job working alongside Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. Speaking of taking the pulse, getting the temperature, we'll see what Brian Lazar has to say about this season and the future of LSU baseball even beyond this 2019 campaign. How much hot water does he think Mannary and Allen Dunn are, and how much should they be in? Excited to interview Brian Lazar coming up on the other side of this break. And do not forget, we've already got a number of folks here at the bar. I hope they're ready to see Louie Cook. If you want to, you'll have a chance. He'll be here to join us at straight up 5 o'clock. One other enticement for you on a Friday. One other reason for you to show up. They've got wine by the glass half off at the bar for the duration of our show. And that's another hour and 33 minutes. So come out and see us. Start your Friday off. End your Friday. Start your weekend off right. Clint, we'll squeeze this call in, but we got to hurry. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dusty, I got about 30 seconds. They're yours.
What happened last night was absolutely ridiculous, and if I was the head of LSU talent relations as far as athletic goes, Paul Mannary won't last long.
Fair enough. No, that's fair. Dusty, I appreciate it. And I expected a good bit of that reaction. I'm not going to tell that fan, I'm not going to tell Dusty that he's wrong, but you got to be careful a little bit. When you try to move on, you have to have a plan in place. I'm not sure that it's the time. I'm not sure that a plan would be in place. One final thought I'll leave you with. I do know that finding the next guy, whether it's after this season, whether it's after the 2020 season, whatever it may be, when LSU moves on from Mannary, they'll have an easier time doing that than the football program did for Miles. That is at least one encouraging thought for the near to distant future. All right, coming right back in, Brian Lazar when we return. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live at Ruffino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Back in and ready to keep the LSU baseball conversation flowing. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're live from Ruffino's on the River on 103.7 The Game, and we need the inside scoop. Let's take a trip to Baton Rouge. Aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline, great to bring back Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com. How are you on a Friday, Brian?
Good, Ben. How you doing?
We're doing well here. Not as well, obviously, in Fayetteville. Your reaction to not just that they lost to the number 4 team in the country last night, but the way it went down and the way seemingly Mannary and LSU just punted it once they got behind?
Well, look, I'm sure you're realistic, and Paul Mannary's going into this weekend saying, I got to get one win. Well, after the third inning last night, you knew that one was going to be your one win. So, therefore, you give it up. And that's, you know, you hate to say, well, don't you try to win every game? Well, yeah, you try to win every game if you're the better team. But if you're not the better team, you got to do what you can to, in this case, you don't want to get swept. You want to win one game. So you, after, like I said, after three innings, LSU wasn't winning last night. So you just throw the guys that you don't count on. Now, I'm sure some people are sort of confused. Well, gee, why did he use Matthew Beck last night when the game's 12-2? Well, I don't know how much, you know, Paul Mannary is counting on Matthew Beck. You know, I don't know. I'm sure he's thinking that, you know, Zach Hess is going to give him a few innings. You know, he can give him as many as four innings in one game. So I think that's just how that's the approach you're going to go right now. And look, what this team is doing right now, it
baseball comes down to one thing, pitching. And if you don't get good pitching and if you don't get good starting pitching, you're not going to win. And last night, for the seventh straight SEC game, LSU's starting pitcher gave up a run before he was able to get six outs.
Wow.
So that means seven straight games now, the opposing team has scored a run in either the first or second inning. Last night, they scored in both the first and the second.
It's an incredible stat. Talking now with Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com. LSU baseball will play tonight at 6:30. And then tomorrow afternoon, game three scheduled in Fayetteville. Considering it's Eric Walker tonight, Brian, Landon Marceau tomorrow, as well as the opposing pitchers, which opportunity do you think lends itself more toward a W?
Well, probably tonight. You know, you would figure you would have a little more trust in Eric Walker on the road than you would Landon Marceau on the road. And, look, this is here's the game plan. Get four or five innings, good innings out of your starter, have a lead, and then you go on to Zach Hess. And hope, you know, Zach Hess is no given. You know, look, let's face it, it's not like he's been great. And but that's the recipe for getting the one win. Get your starter through four or five, have a lead, go to Hess. And you know, you just think that you have a better opportunity doing that tonight with Walker on the mound than you would tomorrow afternoon with Marceau.
Big picture, Brian. A lot of people will fault Alan Dunn. They call this show and tell me all the time for LSU's pitching injury woes. I'm sure it goes much deeper than that. I'm sure it goes to a systemic level of when these kids play before they even get to LSU and their usage. Does this feel like something that's just bad fortune, or is there one reason you'd point to and say, no, LSU's going through this because of X?
I don't know. I'll say this. The three freshman pitchers that have missed time this year, Hill, Marceau, and Henry, there's no structural damage for any of the three. You know, MRIs have been done on all three. There's no structural damage. So that means there's some soreness or some, you know, there is some injury. But, you know, Ben, this is what makes you think all these guys now are think they're professional prospects, and whether it's their handlers or whomever's around them, it is happening more and more these days. If they feel a little tweak or feel a little pain, it's like, well, let me not pitch because I don't want to hurt my future. Now, I don't know if that's the case with these three guys, but, you know, we do know this. There's no structural damage for any of the three LSU pitchers.
Brian, for the crowd that believes Paul Maneri now has reached Les Miles 2015 territory and the word stale continues to be thrown about, how would you react to that?
I can see people saying that. And, look, if LSU doesn't, you know, let's just say they make a regional this year but don't host, that would be two straight years. Now I think there is going to be some type of pressure on him next year because I don't – it's not good for the LSU program to go three straight years where you don't host a regional. So I can see where people are thinking that. But, again, we've seen this before, 2010 and 2010 they had to go to on the road in a regional. 2011 they didn't make a regional. Then he made a big coaching change. You know, he fired David Gruey as the pitching coach and recruiting coordinator and brought in Alan Dunn to be the pitching coach, and things turned around a little bit. So, like I said, we've seen that before. Then – it wouldn't surprise LSU is no lock to make the tournament. You know, they, you know, say they get swept at Arkansas, and they've been very poor in midweek games. So say they lose to UNO next week. Now they got all kinds of pressure on them against Auburn, where they're going to have to win the series just to say, okay, they can make the NCAA tournament.
Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com. Good enough to join us and talk LSU baseball for a few more moments. And we're live from Rufino's on the river. Don't forget, In about 20 minutes, Coach Louis Cook of the Notre Dame Pios will sit with us. Brian, I'll finish up by asking you this. What do you think a realistic conclusion to this season is? You mentioned that they still are in danger of not making the tournament. Obviously, Cole Henry could come back. Maybe they turn it around and make a run, who knows, to the Super Regionals. Do you think maybe the answer is somewhere in between?
I wrote this week, before this week started, I said this is a defining week for LSU. I said if they had four games against one with Tech, three at Arkansas. I said if they would win three out of the four, they would be back where they would be in good position to host a regional. Well, that's not going to happen. They're not winning three out of four. I said if they would go 2-2, they would remain on the regional host bubble for another week. I said if they won one game or no games, now they're going to have to concern themselves strictly with making the NCAA tournament. Don't worry about being a host. They better worry about just making the tournament. So that's where I think they stand right now. If they and I really think the best they can do in these next two games is get a split. And if that's the case, they need, their priority needs to be going into the last week of the regular season, winning enough games where, hey, let's make sure we're in the NCAA tournament. Forget about whether or not we're a host.
Brian, I appreciate you hopping aboard on a Friday. I'm sure it's as wet on your side of the basin as ours, so stay safe this weekend.
Will do. You too, Ben.
Brian Lazar, TigerBait.com. He and Mike Scarborough do a tremendous job with that website, and here recently they have taken it independent. I say recent, within the last year, and they're still doing an absolutely fantastic job. Great place to get your LSU sports coverage. We got to take our final break in the hour. I'll have an update on our STM baseball broadcast. They've entered the semifinal round, and we'll have it not just on our family of stations. We're going to have it right here on Acadiana Sports Station. I'll tell you about that when we return, plus some LSU football tidbits. And as I mentioned, don't forget Louis Cook joining us, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, live at Rufino's on the River at straight up 5 o'clock. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the show.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at
103.7 The Game.
Minutes to 5 o'clock, right back in with more of the good stuff. It's B2BS, that's Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game. We're having a blast at Rufino's on the River. Coach Cook, his wife, just walked in excited to sit down with the head coach of the Notre Dame Pios at straight up 5 o'clock. You want to call in between now and then? We got some time. 706-0111. And a programming note. I just teased this for you. St. Thomas More Baseball was supposed to be on our sister station now because of the delays in play at McMurray Park in Sulphur. It'll be right here, housed on Acadiana Sports Station. St. Thomas More, St. Charles, Sunday at 6 p.m. It's one of your two Division II semis. We'll have it on 103.7 The Game. Again, Sunday at 6, Danny Jones, Coach Steven Stroney will have the call on 103.7 The Game. Should the Cougars, Coach Perkins, advance to the state final game, that one is currently scheduled for Tuesday at noon. We'll also carry that on 103.7 The Game. So these are programming notes that were determined late last night, long after yesterday's show ended. Now I've got the goods for you today. So again, STM St. Charles, Sunday at 6. We'll have it right here. Should they win in advance of the final, scheduled for Tuesday at noon, we'll also have it on 103.7 The Game. And then we'll join the Jordy Holtberg Show in progress. All right, enough of that. I also told you that I had some news on LSU football. Let's start with some personnel notes, and then we'll get to the recruiting. Dantrezi Scott, an athlete from Faraday, kind of listed because they saw him as a potential player on either side of the football, as an outside linebacker or a tight end. He put his name into the transfer portal, and now he has found a home. He's heading to Grambling, and he's going to have 4 years of eligibility. So he spent just the one at LSU. Scott took a redshirt last year, and the athlete from Faraday is going to be with Grambling but I love the point that my friend Shea Dixon, go247.com, I love Shea's point on that subject. And I'll give all the credit to Shea because his math adds up. You can only sign 25 guys a year. There are only 85 roster spots for you. And yet, by Shea's count, there are 409 uncommitted players currently in the NC2A transfer portal. 409. The math there doesn't support that there will be enough open spaces, basically, right? When the musical chairs runs out, you're going to have kids that are still standing up at the FBS level. And so Shea's point is a valid one, and I'll make it here for him. The FCS level and the JUCO levels should score big with the NCAA transfer portal. And maybe that's not a bad thing. Consider it a little bit of maybe, I don't know, thinning of the herd, but creating an open market for said herd thinning. So a great point from Shea, and I wanted to make it for him here. 409 uncommitted players in the transfer portal. They ain't all getting seats at the FBS table. Just because they left one, like Scott, doesn't mean that they're going to one. Interesting there. The other big news, you've got three official visitors that are hitting campus today. Two from the state of Ohio, both from Princeton High School, where former Tiger Spencer Ware prepped, and one offensive lineman from the state of Mississippi. And I could tell you about them, but I'd rather just leave it in the hands of Sonny Shipp. He joined us on Wednesday. Sonny is Shea's partner in crime from Go247.com. I asked Sonny, hey, when Coach O says Ohio is opening up for us, what exactly does he mean? Here was Sonny's response.
Yeah, and you know, when you look at this weekend, they've got three official visitors on the docket for this weekend. One of them's from Mississippi, an offensive guard, and then two of them is out of Princeton, Ohio, the hometown of a former Tiger, Spencer Ware. You've got two of those guys coming in this week, and then 2 weeks later, you have the number one offensive tackle who's currently committed to Ohio State, scheduled to take an official visit to LSU and Paris Johnson. And so the doors have just really opened up for the staff with this recruiting cycle. And look, you know, we've talked about it. I've mentioned this before, that when schools have a successful season, you know, like LSU had a successful 2018 season, it's hard to really cash in on the recruiting dividends of that, because most of these kids, you've been recruiting for a long time, and a lot of these kids already know where they want to go. But when you start, usually the spillover effect is in the following class, and that's what you're seeing with LSU right now. Number six final ranking in the country last year, 10-3 season, a lot of positive momentum with 16 starters back this year, a lot of national hype, a lot of national press, and the staff is able to cash in on that from the recruiting perspective by getting kids out of Maryland, by getting kids out of California, by still hitting Texas. And it's crazy, but when you look at it, Louisiana has very, very few commitments in this class right here. This class is dominated from outside of the state.
So how about it? You got three coming in, none of them from the state of Louisiana. Another question I asked Sonny in that interview, and I'll just give you his answer here. I'll speak for him. I remember, and I keep using this reference point, but I remember vividly during the time that I was at the scout affiliate covering LSU recruiting, I remember that Frank Wilson, then the recruiting coordinator, running backs coach for LSU, now over at UTSA, Frank was always pretty fond of saying, hey, at the boot, we think we can get 16, 17, maybe even 18 kids, right, or out of the boot to LSU. So that's 16, 17, 18 out of 25. So this time around, I asked Sonny what feels realistic, maybe 9 or 10, and he said, yeah, actually, that probably feels about right. And the positions that they're continuing to dole out offers for inside the state of Louisiana are places like receiver, where they've already got not only talent, but numbers. You know, I mean, look at what they're doing right now at receiver. They got a kid from California that I know the coaching staff feels like is one of the best players in the country at his position, no matter what the rankings say. I know they almost always feel that way, but trust me, in this case, they do. So they've got a receiver commit from Cali, one from the East Coast, and then they've got, from right here in our backyard, Kayshawn Booty from Westgate High School. So there is just so much talent at that position. If you're a receiver in the state of Louisiana and LSU's offering after that, You just got to want to be at LSU. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but you're not choosing based on playing time. And so many in this day and age do. So interesting that LSU might have a class that struggles to get to double digits from inside of Louisiana and yet may darn well be a top two class in the country. Clemson, LSU, Alabama duking it out right now in 2020. And there's a big gap between those top three and everybody else. So they're having success venturing elsewhere. They'll look to continue that this weekend. Two kids from Ohio, as I mentioned, and one from Mississippi. I gave you another note at the top of this hour. I know how many of you shuffle in and out of your vehicles. So let me refresh this, because speaking of recruiting, this is pretty cool from the local level. Walker Howard, a 2022 quarterback from St. Thomas More. We know him, right? This is Jamie's kid. He's currently backing up Caleb Holstein for the Cougars. He got his first offer today, and it came from Billy Napier and the Raging Cajuns. So the local school is the first to offer Walker Howard. He's going to have so many opportunities. But again, I'll repeat what I said about 40 minutes ago. If you're Billy Napier, if you're Tim Leger, shoot your shot. You got to do that. And so they're making a run at Walker Howard, who, again, isn't even the starter at St. Thomas More right now, but that speaks to the abundance of riches that Jim Hightower and the Cougars have. All right, CD, it's been a dynamite first hour. We think it's going to get even better in hour number two. But let's wrap this one up in style, and we're going to do that with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Advance, the name of the game in postseason play. Survive and advance. Cajun softball did just that earlier this afternoon, playing in the semis of the Sun Belt Conference tourney. Second straight game that Jerry Glasgow's ladies have fallen behind. They were down 2-1 after an inning. They came storming back. ULB Coastal Carolina, final score today, 5-2. And so UL, the number 7 team in the country, has advanced to Saturday's. That's tomorrow. They're going to play in Saturday's Sunbelt Conference title game. And it would be absolutely shocking if they didn't win that. That's just part of what they do. Summer Ellison and company with the Raging Cajuns rolling along, and they have rolled into the Sunbelt Conference title game. No surprise there, but you got to survive and you got to advance. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They're your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. I mentioned we've got a dynamite 5 o'clock hour coming up. Coach Louie Cook sitting in. Come out and join us if you get a chance. We're at Rufino's on the river. A lot of reasons to be here. You can listen to myself, Coach Cook. You can also enjoy half off wine by the glass between now and 6 o'clock. Come celebrate life with us at Rufino's on the river. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be back in on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 2 underway. Ben Love, and for the next hour, joined by the Hall of Famer, Louie Cook. We're live at Rufino's on the River, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Coach, thrilled to bring you here. Great to talk a little bit with you and your wife in the break. She seems like she's pretty seasoned with the sports talk radio thing. She might could step in if we needed it.
Yeah, she probably could do it. Now she's been around it for a long time, and it's been a blessing having her as my top assistant coach, because you can't do it without them, you know. And but it's nice to be here, Ben. I appreciate the opportunity to come and spend some time with you. And I'm glad that if the river was any higher, we might be in a little bit of a bind right with all this high water. But we're all right now, so it's good.
It's creeping up on us a little bit, no question about it. Glad to be joined, as I mentioned, by Louie Cook, head coach of the Notre Dame Pios. And I'll never forget, I started doing this show in May of 2015. So we're just at about the four-year mark. And so one of the very first times I mentioned your program, I said, Notre Dame of Crowley. Brother, I mean, in a snap, there was a call and said, you will refer to us as Notre Dame of Acadia Parish. It came quickly.
Yeah, probably somebody from Rain. You know, but that you know, real quick, the history. In 1967, they closed the three Catholic high schools in Acadia Parish. I actually, my older sister was the last graduating class at St. Joe and Rain. And that's where I went through eighth grade there. And with talk of the schools, this consolidation maybe coming about, I ended up going to Rain High School. My dad wanted us to be in, you know, the same high school for 4 years. Actually, I would have gone to Notre Dame as a junior had I stayed at St. Joe. But they closed them down and they made it, you know, and then St. Francis of Iota was the third school, St. Michael's. And St. Michael's had the biggest campus, so they brought everything to Crowley. There was intentions to build a school between Rain and Crowley that land was donated, but it never did come about. Obviously, we're still in Crowley. But, so we noted the name of Acadia Parish. And I tell people in Rain, because I still live in Rain, and I tell them, I said, well, you know, Rain has two high schools. They all said, what you talking about? I said, you have Rain High School and you have Notre Dame. I said, because there's a lot of Rain kids that go there. I said, it just happens to be in Crowley. But, you know, there are two options for Rain kids to go to school, to high school. Like I said, Rain High, Notre Dame. But
I'm sure our mutual friend Kane Gidra understands that. He's taken over at Rain High School.
You know, Kane actually,
and you're very
coached,
familiar with
he
him.
He coached with us for 3 years, you know. And, yeah, I was happy for Kent. In fact, when he left us, he left to go back to Rain, and I told him, I said, Kane, I said, you know, if they ever offer you a job, because he was teaching in Acadia Parish, but coaching with us, I said, if one of the parish schools offer you a job, you almost have to take it, because I don't think they'll let you keep teaching and know that you're coaching with us. But we've talked quite a bit since he's got that job, and trying to help him get things going.
Coach, I think many times people, and I'll use myself as an example, didn't grow up in this area. So sometimes you get implanted and you see the payoff maybe or the success. I can look at the back end of your career and understand what you're doing now. Don't always necessarily have an understanding of the hard times and maybe the early stumbles as you're gaining your footing. What were those times like for you early on when you were figuring your way through this coaching profession?
Well, you know, I started at Rain in 74, and I was an assistant there for 3 years. And something that happened before I ever coached a game was when I was hired by a man named Ted Bravell, who was the head coach at Rain High at the time. And this was in the spring of 74. He actually got hired at McNeese, so I never did coach a game with him. And Barn Rockets was a guy on the staff, was a defensive coordinator, was elevated to the job. And it's ironic that the guy whose place I took was Don Rodrigue, whose brother is Ruffin, that owns this place right here where we are. But I was just telling my wife Faye about that. That's who I replaced. He was the running back coach. He played at McNeese. He'd come from McNeese with Bravell. And but Rockets called me in the first, once he got the job, the first meeting we had, he said, because he'd been the defensive coordinator, he says, Louis, what do you know about linebackers? I said, I think they run on the field when the other team has the ball. He says, okay, well, you're the linebacker coach. So I said, do we have a playbook? So he gave me what they were doing on defense. And then he, after the first week of practice, back in those days, you had two scrimmages, you know, and then the jamboree. He said, oh, by the way, you're going to call the defenses. I said, well, how do you do that? So from day one, you know, it was just thrown in my lap, but which worked out good. The little bit I knew might have been about offense, because I had played quarterback. I also had played safety, but, you know, most of my time was spent, you know, offensively. So it gave me 2 years as a defensive coordinator to, you know, which helped once I became the head coach. At least I had some general idea of both sides of the ball. And in my fourth year, I got the head job at Rain. And, we were fortunate to win two games that year. We just weren't very good, but the kids played hard. And then from that point on, you know, we've been able to have winning seasons since then. But that was tough. And then the fortunate thing for me was Sam Robinson hired me at USL in 81. So after 4 years of being head coach, I had a chance to go back to college and earn a PhD in football, so to speak, because that really helped me. It probably saved my career because, you know, I don't know how much I was learning on the run, you know, and I wasn't under anybody that could help me until I got to coaching college. And then after 4 years there, you know, I went over to Crowley High School, and Randy Champagne was a kid that played linebacker for us at Rain that Sam Robinson recruited when he was an assistant at UL. And that's how I got to know him, and that pretty much led him to hire me several years later. And Randy was coaching at Rain along with another guy, Randy Thibodeau. So as I took the job at Crowley, I got both of them to come with me. And my Crowley hadn't won a game in 2 years when I took the job. They lost 22 straight, actually. But they'd gone 0-10 in 83 and 0-10 in 84. Everybody thought I was crazy. I was quarterback coach, you know, the division one, going to take a job at Crowley, hadn't won a game. And I never forget, after the second day of spring practice in 85, we walked off the practice field, and I apologized to those two guys for bringing them over. I said, guys, have y'all ever seen anything this bad? I gave up college ball, and I got you guys, and Rain had just won the district. Yeah. I said, man, I'm sorry to get you guys in this. But, you know, I took the job because I felt that Crowley, you know, had a chance to win if we could get things going. I knew they had talent over the years. And fortunately, you know, 5 years later, we won the state championship and played again for it in 91, 2 years after that. So, it's funny you asked that question, because my youngest son Stu is in his third year coaching right now. He only saw the latter part of Notre Dame, you see. So he's going through these struggles where he is, and then when we start talking, he's asking, and I'm answering questions. But Dad never realized you had to go through all of that. So yeah, everybody pays dues now.
This interview is recorded. We can run it back for every young coach throughout the area. Yeah. Louis Cook of the Notre Dame Pios with us. We're live at Ruffino's on the River. So much I want to get to, and we will. The Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, the idea of multi-sport participation and how that can help young athletes. But I'll wind down this segment with a simple question. I don't know if there's a simple answer. Did you like recruiting? Two stops at USL at the time. Did you like it?
I did. You know, it was tough because there's so many disappointments. You know, and for us, you know, being that mid-level school, you know, was because I had made up my mind I was going to go after it. It didn't matter who it was. I was going to, even if I just got to know them, you know. Because if it was a big-time player, I was like, I at least want to know the guys, you know. I never forget, I went into a school, Lamarck, Texas. I'd watched them play a game on Friday night, because my first year actually recruited. All my schools were in the Golden Triangle of Beaumont, Port Arthur, Orange. And then I had down towards Winnie and down to Galveston. But I watched Lamarck play, and they had some players. I'm like, wow, you know, So I go to the school the next week, and I'm asking the head coach, and he hands me a list of prospects. And two or three of them, the guys I weren't on the list. And I said, Coach, what about these guys I saw? He said, oh, they're Southwest Conference players. That was at the time when Texas and them were the Southwest. He said, oh, no, they're Southwest Conference guys. I said, well, Coach, if I can't have a chance to talk to all the kids, I'm not going to recruit any of them, you know. So he gave me the names. And I didn't get him, obviously, you know. But there was a kid at South Houston High School that I got to be real close to. He signed with the University of Texas. But the next spring when I went back by the school, I asked the coach about him. And he said, Coach, he's already back home. He stayed one semester, and he was at Houston Community College. So, of course, there was no cell phone, no computers back then. This is in the 80s, you know. So I pull out my little questionnaires that you went by. I had known his mom, so I called his house. And his mom was, that son of a gun, you know, she was down on him. She said, I'd like to get him in Lafayette. She said, Coach, I would love that. So we're starting August practice, and everybody's going, where does this safety come from? You know what I mean? This guy. Well, 2 weeks into practice, we get the admissions office calls. Before I had gotten to him, he had stopped going to class at the community college, and instead of withdrawing, he just took F's. And we couldn't get – I had to send him. He could have stayed, but they couldn't afford – you know, we couldn't pay
because right.
he wasn't qualified. And so he ended up – but just the fact that, you know, I knew I wasn't going to get him. You know, he's going to Texas. But, you know, you can pick up those kind of guys. You know, we've had it happen several times. And I never – you know, I told kids if they had a big-time offer, if I felt that that's where they should be, I didn't – I tell them, hey, there's nothing wrong with going to LSU or an A&M, you know. I said, you can always come back, you know. I said, but if you come with us, there's no going. You know, you're not going to leave us and go to LSU, you know.
Right.
But I enjoyed being on the road, meeting the coaches, talking to them. It was a blessing that the first year that I had all these Texas schools. I got to meet so many people, see how things were done differently in Texas high school football as compared to Louisiana. And then just getting to meet, you know. After that year, they put me back in this area, and so I knew, you know, I get to know all the assistant coaches as well. So it was good, and just being with the kids. But like I said, you know, I would battle hard to try to get them. And there was only one kid that LSU actually offered that, home, you know, Curly Hallman was there at the time, and Anthony Clement from Cecilia. He played for the Arizona Cardinals after he left. We got him to sign with us because – he just wasn't comfortable in the big time. And, you know, his teammate, Edward Singleton, signed with LSU, but he came with us. And so most of the guys that had an offer, there was a kid, Garland Jean-Baptiste, played for LSU from St. Martinville. And Carol Delahousse and I are best friends, and I was over there a lot. And Carol called me one day, Jerry Stovall, and one of the other coaches was in his home for a home visit. And Carol said, man, they laid it out, bowl games, TV games. You know, Carol said, I was ready to sign. And he said, they asked Garland, well, you ready? He said, well, I got to talk to Coach Cook first. You know, and he floored him, you know. But we were just close, you know. But he ended up going to LSU. And it was the best, you know, it was the thing he needed to do, you know. So, but you know, those types of things. I mean, there's so many stories that, you know, I was telling a guy today, I had a coach from Lamar come by and, when I recruited in Houston, in that Houston area, some of the things that I watched the game. Beaumont Hebert, which is no longer there, they consolidated, was playing Houston Willow Ridge. And I was recruiting Hebert. It was a semifinal game. There was about 25,000 at the stadium in Pasadena. They played on neutral. They were in Pasadena on a turf field. This is 1981. And the running back for Houston Willow Ridge was Thurman Thomas. And the fullback linebacker was a junior for Hebert, Jerry Ball, who
wow.
played at SMU and went to the Lions as a nose tackle, you know. So, and I was recruiting Jerry. I'd spent some time with Jerry, although he was a junior, but I'd go by that school. You know, so those types of things were fun, you know, and the experience that, you know, was pretty neat.
I'm glad we were able to recruit you here today. We're going to take a quick break. Got more. For Louis Cook on the other side. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out, having a blast, starting our weekend at Rafina's on the River and bringing you home on 103.7 The Game.
Break it.
Let's go, people.
Come on back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Back in action, ready for more with Coach Louis Cook. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from Rafino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. And the Pios have invaded the building. Coach, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, we've got a few Pio dads and moms here today. So, got Benny Broussard. Benny's son is our quarterback. The two Bens on the team, Jeremy Robichaud and his wife, Ben Robichaud, played a strong tackle for us. The good thing about it, both of them are juniors. So they're coming back. And Ben Broussard, what a job he did for us at quarterback this year. He's a playing little son.
You told me I had the call of Karen Crow and Notre Dame in the Jamboree last year, Kiwanis Jamboree, and you told me we've got a running quarterback this year.
Yeah.
It's a little different than we've had the last few seasons, and you're able to rattle off an undefeated year and go into a state championship. How are you looking coming into the season?
Well, you know, Ben's back, so it always helps when you got your quarterback coming back. You know, we have C.J. Thibodeau coming back in the backfield. We lost Noah Bourgeois was just electrifying for us. It was, tell everybody, it was like having Darren Sproles on our football team, an undersized guy that just played as big as anybody on the field. But with C.J. coming back, you know, that gives us, you know, the thunder punch that we had last year. We said Noah was the lightning. So, just having them, Ben Robichaud is back on the offensive line. And so that's our three main guys that played a lot last year on the offensive side. Defensively, we have three defensive linemen coming back, which is going to be huge for us. And then Gabe Linkett, linebacker. So those are the four guys that are back. The key for us is how fast our secondary can, because we had four seniors. Actually, we played five seniors back there last year. So how fast those guys will come back around. Jack Falk, Jack started for us at receiver. He's back. You know, I'm moving him to the X position where Kaiser Lamb was, and Kaiser was our leading receiver. That position kind of ends up being our go-to guy in the throwing game. And, yeah, Ben is a really good runner, but people don't realize how good a passer, you know, he is as well. That's going to be nice to have him back. So, you know, spring's going pretty good right now. We have 1 week left to go with 3 days left. If it'll stop raining, yeah. We got washed out Thursday. But we'll hopefully can get it going. We have 27 juniors that'll be seniors. So we have a good-sized class there. And, hopefully, the leadership from our senior class last year was unbelievable, and I think this class will do the same for us.
I've heard you speak on this subject before. Our listeners probably have not. But how can track and field participation and competition lead to success in other sports like football?
Well, you know, obviously there's been a lot of coaches over the years that some of them have had rules that if you don't play football, you have to run track. You know, it becomes kind of the sprint training of your off-season program. You know, I don't have that rule. We encourage as many as we can. For us, our guys, we have so many of them that are football, baseball players. You know, and last year in our baseball team, you know, we had seven of the nine everyday starters were football players, and they went on to win the state championship. And we did have a good group like CJ, you know, both our corners, the Brand Tennyson and Drew Fruge will be our two starting corners. They were part of the relay team that we had this year. Peyton Smith has been playing both corner and running back. So those four guys were our relay team, you know. So it definitely makes a big difference because, you know, the competition. I had a kid that when we won the state championship in Crowley, my quarterback was a kid named Joy LaFosse. And Joy played guard at middle school. But he's a little guy. He wasn't very big, but in elementary school. And the reason when he got to Crowley High, that eighth grade class came without a quarterback. The seventh and eighth grade team was quarterbacked by a seventh grader. So I needed a quarterback. And I picked Joy LaFosse because I watched him run track. And I watched how hard he competed. And I never forget watching him come down the home stretch running the 800 and fighting to get ahead of the guy. And I said, well, if that guy can finish that hard in the 800, he got a little bit of guts. And 4 years later, he led us to the state championship and was the offensive MVP. So, yeah, there are a lot of things that you can learn, and you watch him. You know, I always tell him, anytime that there's something you can do to learn to compete, you know, that causes you. Orlando Thomas, okay, played for the Vikings, played for me at Crowley High. Orlando Thomas was 13 years old in the ninth grade. His birthday's October, in late October. He started school as a five-year-old. So he played seven games his senior year as a 16-year-old senior.
Whew.
Okay. He came to Crowley High, weighed 98 pounds in the ninth grade. He was 13 years old. At the end of his 10th grade, at the end of the season, right as track was starting, he came to me and says, "Coach, I'm going to play college football." Now, he was up to about 120 at the time. He was tall, you know, and I kind of, you know, had a look. He said, "You don't think I could do it?" I said, "I don't know that you can, but I said, I know one thing right now. You're not doing everything you can to help yourself." So we started track. I don't see you on the track team. And I said, you know, that'll help you get faster, stronger, the next day he's on the track team. No one signed him on signing day, okay? He was 1 point shy on the ACT at the time. His grades were good, but back then there was no sliding scale, you know? So that was one of the reasons. Well, when he ran the 448-something during the track season, I was like, here comes this attention now. You know, so he ends up, you know, Coach Stokely signed him. He said whether he made he made his grades. And so, but there again was a situation where track helped this kid to get the scholarship. And look what happened.
And we saw what it became.
7 years in the NFL. So
that's incredible.
Yeah.
Coach, we got to take one more break. I'm going to get you for one more segment. Then I know you got to make the rounds.
Oh, yeah.
We got a lot of Pio fans here. We're having fun. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. The fun continues live from Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Here we go. Back for more. One more time with Coach Louis Cook. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from Rufino's on the River on 103.7 The Game. Coach, of course, a state championship this past season with Notre Dame of Acadia Parish. You brought half of the parish here with you. You know, we're grateful for that. There's an interesting storyline that has followed us over the last couple of months, all of high school sports in Louisiana. This idea that now select state championships in football, boys and girls basketball, baseball, and softball can now be played off-site from the rest. And in your sport, that means that you don't have to play in the Louisiana Superdome anymore. What's your take on everything that's transpired with that storyline?
Well, you know, we're out of the dome right, you know, as of right now. I mean, they're going to proceed with the five games of non-select schools, you know, like it used to be when we were all together. You know, I've been around long enough to actually coach in the state championship game in 1975 at Lutcher. So I was at Rain. I was assistant coach at Rain, and we got to the finals. So I've coached in a game that before it even got to the dome. It was pretty, you know, I mean, the atmosphere, you know, because Lutcher, you know, football at Lutcher is the only thing, you know. And so for us going down there, I can remember, and of course that was my second year in coaching, so it's like, wow, you know. You know, I mean, obviously the dome was special, and everybody, when I got to Crowley High and they hadn't won a game in 2 years and we redid the locker room, we painted a picture of the dome. You know, not so much of the fact of going to the dome, but obviously that's where the state championship was played. Because I also can remember the minute that we sat down to talk after winning the semifinal game in 89, where we had beat Broadmoor High School to get to qualify. I told the kids, I said, if I hear one of you guys say we're going to the dome, I'm leaving you home. So we're going to play for the championship. It just happens to be in the dome. You know, the one good thing was that week, I didn't have to check the weather. You know, because I sweat, you know, as a coach, you sweat the weather all the time.
You know, people listening may laugh when you say that, but I'll throw an example out there. And I've had to tell my friends on the St. Thomas More side this, like, look, if you're the number one seed and you get to the final, you get to choose. That's great.
Yeah.
But what if Evangel's the number one seed?
Yeah.
You might be playing outside in Shreveport in December.
Exactly.
You never know.
So, you know, we did that, you know, in 05 when Katrina – the dome was out, and we made the championship game that year. It was 20 degrees, who played on a Thursday night at Independence Stadium.
Wow.
Against Redemptorist out of Baton Rouge. So, you know, I've been through it. You know, it got to the point to where the last 2 years we played Catholic High. We play a Thursday night game at 7 o'clock. I mean, we got to get out of school, got to call it off on Friday, call half a day on Thursday. It seemed like we were getting all the times that, you know, John Curtis is playing this for the state chef at noon on Saturday. Come on, you know. So it was like, you know, maybe it's time to do it, to take a look at it. Money-wise, 2 years ago, not very many people realize this, but we weren't even paid the guarantees that were promised to us, you know. So we went to New Orleans. I brought 100 kids to New Orleans to suit up for the game, feed them, the whole deal. We got $4,500, you know, for the state championship game. I mean, you know, so there's a lot of factors that went into this. And, I mean, ideally, you know, we need to get back together. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Completely agree.
Because it's really, you know, and look, I'm happy for Welsh High School. They won them a state championship 2 years ago. We're in the same district. We beat them 47-7. You know, we're playing in New Orleans on Thursday. They're playing on Friday. You know, and like I said, I know they're excited. I'm happy for them. It was a great opportunity. But how do you, in your own mind, really say we are the true state champs? Even for us, too. I mean, we won it this year. I'd like to see a Notre Dame A-meet matchup. You know, how would that have turned out? So, you know, it's just the kids. I remember we had a game washed out because of a hurricane, and on a Friday we were supposed to play. I picked up a game with Como High School, the 5A, we 2A. You know, and when I picked it up, we were in our PE period, and I went to the kids and I said, "Hey guys, I think we're gonna have a game tomorrow at 1 o'clock." So now here we get a game at 11 o'clock on Friday. The kids never asked who we were playing. It was like, oh, great, coach, it's great. Finally, after about 10 minutes, I was going to wait and see how long it was going to go before one of them goes, "Well, coach, where are we going?" So we're going to Como. They just want to play.
Yeah.
They just want to play, you know. And so there were some problems. We needed to address a lot of issues. But hopefully one day we can kind of put this thing back and see if there's a fair way to do it. I think that there is, but we all need to come together and figure that out and, you know, look at what's best for the whole association and not just Notre Dame or
everybody will be better
one
together.
Individual school.
I'm with you. I'd love to see Humpty Dumpty put back together.
Yeah.
And I do think that's part of the genius in what Mike Boyer is doing. That's my opinion. I've said it on this program before. But in the interim, it could provide some interesting situations. I don't know if it's Notre Dame. I don't know if it's St. Thomas More, if it's LCA, it's anybody in the area. But the prospects of a state championship game in Cajun Field would be something.
Well, I know, you know, Brent Indes and I talked, you know, had we had those 2 years like that and we do go to Cajun Field, we'd probably be somewhere between $60,000 and $100,000 to the good in our program had we played it in Lafayette instead of having to go down to New Orleans, which
give me a little bit of insight there. That's based off of the gate and what else?
Right,
I'm curious.
Okay. You know, they gave each of us got 1,500 tickets to sell. All right. There's been years where we've sold 3,500 before we left. They say they're going to give you $1 per ticket that you sell. Okay, so you get $1,500. The guarantee for a 2A school, us in Catholic High, $7,000. So you go there. All right, so let's just say they sold all theirs, boom, right away. So that's 3,000 tickets sold. Let's just say we each sell, you know, another 1,000. So the 5,000 tickets sold, you know, 15, whatever they sold. At 15, that's $75,000. All right, so you pay the LHSA 10%. So now you're down to 67.5. Say all the expenses, referees, rent, is another $7,500. That leaves you $60,000. So in 2 years, you know, we've got $30,000 each for 2 years. So that's 60, and that's with a mod. That's 5,000. That's a modest.
Yeah.
Like I said, we sold 3,500. several years to people all going all the way to New Orleans to watch the game. Just think what would have showed up here.
Oh, my gosh.
And then if STM's falling right behind us or LCA or, you know, who knows what you could do in that stadium.
You coached in that stadium two times, yeah. So you know I'm not casting any aspersions, but there would be more people for some of those games than some of the Cajuns football games. Let's tell it like it is.
Especially if we set up a doubleheader.
You know,
if there's going to be two of us playing, you know, an STM game following ours, you know, STM and U-High. But that's come right after Notre Dame Cali High. You don't think that thing would be jammed up? You know, so, yeah, there are some good prospects to this thing. You know, it just, you know, we still got a lot of things to work out. But, I mean, like I said, I've coached semifinal games in Crawley Stadium where we had to bring in extra seating. And that's pretty neat. When those kids come onto that field and, you know, that little, you know, it's a great little atmosphere. Everything's enclosed at Crawley Stadium. And you put people all around that, behind the benches and all around there. I mean, we've done that, you know, in 89 when we got to the final, semifinals with Broadmoor. And I had to bring in extras. We played Lutcher at Notre Dame in 06 in the semifinal. We had to bring in extra seating. And that stadium, you know, the stadium in Crawley holds probably almost 4,000. It's jammed up. It's pretty neat, you know. And Ben, one thing real quick was bad is – you know, on the financial side of it, which the bottom line is you got a chance to win a state championship. That's most important. Where it's played, what money, whatever, you know, you sacrifice that because you want to win the championship. But, you know, what happens is the last 2 years we've gotten a bye the first round. We've played two games.
That's right.
And then we sit out a week waiting to go to New Orleans.
That's right.
You know, so – In 2012, the last year before the split.
And look, that's part of what Boyer was saying as well, and they're experiencing it at Turlings and everywhere with baseball too. You know,
it's not just football.
Oh,
but in 2012, which was the last year we were all together, we go to East Feliciana. Here we are in the middle of nowhere, Clinton, Louisiana, you know, and played it. Beckwith was a senior. We played him in the semifinals. That little community sent us a check for $14,000. Our cut from that game that night. Okay, that's more than we made in the two home games that we had this year, you know, our share leading up to the dome. So you know, you're losing out in other areas, and you're not making it up with a championship game, you see. So, like I said, you know, and people say, oh, well, the private schools got money. Hey, our parents are working as hard as anybody else. They're sacrificing this, and they don't have thousands of dollars they can just throw at you to say, oh, you know, here, you know, we'll help out. You know, they do what they can, but it's not like that for everybody, you know. So I'm anxious to see how this thing's going to progress.
Let me know, however I can help there. I'll be in the Cajun field if that happens, but we need somebody to call that game. You know my number, so we'll figure that out. Coach, I really do appreciate this. Yeah. This has been a treat so far. Trev Falk, Kevin Falk, we've had a number of people come and join us. This has been really enjoyable getting to sit down one-on-one.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. It's always fun. And, you know, I appreciate you calling, giving me the opportunity to come and, you know, just talk to high school sports is so important. It means so much in this area. You know, I'm just glad to have been a part of it to just finish my 45th year coaching. And hopefully I got a couple left in me, but we'll see what happens.
I do a 2 to 3 hour show every day. If they let me talk high school sports the whole time, I would. I think they'd run me off if I did.
Yeah. Well, you can't do it the whole time. But thanks again, and I appreciate what you all do for high school sports.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, Ben, thank you.
All right, we got to take our final break of the program. We'll take your calls on the other side, 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in to Ravino's on the River on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Well, I had never thought of it that way.
But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Ten minutes to 6 o'clock. Here's the hard truth. It doesn't get any better than that. Not saying you're not going to enjoy the next 10 minutes, but it's hard to top what we just had. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in. For the final time today on 103.7 The Game. We're live at Ruffino's on the River, and you just had the better part of three quarters of an hour with the living legend, Louis Cook, Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, head coach of the Notre Dame of Acadia Parish. Pios, the last segment, in particular, everything on what's going on with the further split, the ability to play a football title game outside of the dome, where they are financially with it, utterly fascinating to me. And I promise you that we will be replaying and visiting that topic on Monday. I promise you that that will be posted not just as on-demand audio to 1037thegame.com and the free mobile app, but the part on high school athletics and what's going on with the football state title games, the financial aspects, and everything that you just heard, that'll be part of a blog post at 1037thegame.com as well. So, again, my thanks to Louis Cook for coming out. That was spectacular. Before we round out the show, I got to give our friends at Patio Center just what they want. And frankly, it's what I want as well. It's your daily reminder that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home and to beautify life outside your home. Alex will be the one to put up your shades and awnings while Todd mans the installation of your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. All it takes to start, a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
It is really simple today, but it is really effective. After going down 1-0, the Milwaukee Bucks seemingly were in a bit of a hole, right? In the Eastern Conference semi-matchup with the Boston Celtics. They had lost home court one game in, and the top overall seed in the East, well, it must have just been the roughest of times for them. Or at least, so Paul Pierce thought. Former Boston Celtic great Paul Pierce, a guy who is all about some self-aggrandizing, said on the mothership that the Bucks were in trouble and that they were done. You may recall what has happened since. The Bucks won 4 straight and won the series 4-1. And obviously that includes multiple wins at the Garden in Boston. And so in Milwaukee, some genius is posting flyers all around Milwaukee, and it's a missing flyer. You know what I'm talking about. A little boy, little girl, even a dog goes missing. You got missing flyers. It says missing. Have you seen him? Multiple question marks. A picture of Paul Pierce. And then it says last seen on 428 saying stupid stuff on ESPN. If found, please contact Bango at 1-414, and then he spells out Bucks in 5. That is absolutely spectacular. It is not subtle, but it wasn't meant to be. Hopefully, somebody could find the truth, though.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
As if it weren't good enough, right? As if it weren't gold on its own, the phone number, Bucks in 5. Yeah, they were down 1-0. How'd that go in Beantown? Ended up being a sweep the other way from there on out. It's been a clean sweep so far this week. We have had dynamite guests, great calls, great topics. In the last 3 days, we've been fortunate enough to be out on remote having a blast. Our thanks again. It started on Wednesday. We were out at Musinpatu, pre-owned in New Iberia. Yesterday, spent some time at the Tap Room River Ranch. A great guest showed up in person there, Jeff Horchek. He's got less than a month left at KLFY TV 10 in Lafayette before going to Monroe. So always great to have him. And, of course, for the last 45 minutes, you got to hear from Louis Cook. It's been a whole lot of fun. So our thanks to everybody that's been gracious enough to host us. And this probably one of our top two turnouts so far at Rufino's on the River. A lot of folks from Acadia Parish made their way over. My friend Steve just showed up as well. Going to get with him, see if I can't find some of that wine by the glass that I've been telling you about as soon as we're done here. So a lot of fun today at Rufino's on the River. I want to thank everybody here. The managers, of course, Greg and Chris. My man, Ruffin Rodri, who you'll hear from on Monday, back in his 5:15 slot in our batting lineup. And I got to thank the guests that came aboard today. Not only Coach Louis Cook of Notre Dame, but Brian Lazar, tigerbait.com. One heck of a week, and I'm at the best place in town to celebrate life and wind it down, Ruffino's on the River. Come join us if you get a chance. Coming up on the other side, we've got LSU, Arkansas, game two from Fayetteville. To say the Tigers need this one, to say there's some desperation, would be a series of understatements. Eric Walker on the bump, Paul Menary, Alan Dunn need him to come through. And you'll hear all the action right here on 103.7 The Game. So for the famous Clint D., my name is Ben Love. Enjoy your weekend. Stay dry. Stay safe. We'll catch you back Monday at 4 with more Bumper to Bumper Sports on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.